Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Tuesday in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And the NCAA basketball tournament gets underway tonight. Manhattan will be in action against Hampton. And it'll be Ole Miss against BYU coming up tonight. Talk a little bit about the tournament. Interesting move made at Colorado today. Askia Booker, fine scorer, 17-plus points a game, a senior for Colorado. Colorado is the only Power 5 school that opted to play in the CBI this year. He is a senior, opted out. He is not going to play in it as their leading scorer. And you know, he's getting support from the coach, Tad Boyle, teammates, and so forth, but he opted out. Interesting. Very interesting. He said, look, he says, you know, they're going to be, he says, you're going to get, says you're going to catch a lot from a lot of people when you announce this, but, you know, he's getting his degree, but he is not going to be involved in the CBI for Colorado. So that's his decision, and that's one of the topics we'll discuss a little bit later in the show. And looking forward to that. So, all right. We're going to talk a little bit about the Penguins. The James Franklin press conference coming up today to talk about spring football. The way it's going to work here is that coming up on Thursday will be pro day for Penn State. They'll go through their final morning workout, early morning workout on Thursday. Pro day will take place here Thursday. I think around noon will be when they hit the weight room for that part of it. And then go from there. And spring practice will begin for the Nittany Lion football team on Friday as they get ready for the upcoming season. And the first four will start tonight. As I mentioned, Hampton against Manhattan. Winner gets to be blown out by Kentucky. And Ole Miss will take on BYU. Dick Girardi, Daily News. Fabulous article today dealing with the bracket and what to look for in the bracket. And that's... and this goes with the article he did on Steve Donahue yesterday. He's going to be the new head coach at Penn. A lot of coaching changes out there already. Paul Hewitt out at George Mason. I remember when he was the head coach at Siena 2000. Maybe the wildest game I ever saw played in the Jordan Center, where Penn State, on a last-second shot by Titus Ivory, beat Siena in the NIT second round 105-103. And Penn State was lucky to play that game here because, I'm trying to think, Ricky Martin was playing at the Knickerbocker Arena. That's what it was called. It's called the Times Union Center now. But he was playing, and they couldn't have the arena. So they had to play the game here. And Paul Hewitt was the coach, and then he left Siena, and he took the job at Georgia Tech. And some good years there, but didn't totally pan out. And then he went to George Mason, and now he's been relieved there. Oliver Purnell out at DePaul. And then at Alabama, Anthony Grant, who really built the foundation and the cornerstone for what you see at VCU with Shaka Smart. When they went to the Final Four, a lot of those recruits were Anthony Grant's recruits. We went to Alabama, and he got them to the NCAA tournament. Once they had a winning season this year, they're in the NIT this year. I believe they're playing Illinois. They're hosting them in the opening round. And they won't have their coach on the sideline. They decided to go a different direction. So, already a lot of coaches on the firing line already. In college basketball, heading into, of course, the tournament. What do you look for in the tournament? How do you break it down? Let's talk about what Vegas thinks, first of all. Vegas thinks that there are only, to them, two legitimate upsets on the board. They've got Ohio State as a favorite over VCU, a 10 over a 7. And they have Texas as a favorite over Butler, an 11 over a 6. That's it. Every other game, they have the line set with the higher seed as the favorite. So what do you look for? Oh, matchups are always going to be important. One of the areas I look at for certain teams, especially in a scenario like this, is which of the lower seeds can shoot threes? And that becomes, I think, a very important part in all of this. Which lower seeds can shoot threes? You can do that, it increases your chances of, quote, pulling the upset. So among the lower seeds, Eastern Washington is one. They become a trendy pick among a lot of people to be Georgetown. And Georgetown's in a spot at that four seed that I don't understand. I don't know why they're a four seed. I don't know what they did to earn a four seed. But Eastern Washington is a volume three-point shooting team. They were seventh in the nation in three-pointers attempted. And they were fourth in the nation in three-pointers made. They do that, they become a dangerous 13 seed over a 4. And Tyler Harvey is the guy that gets it done for Eastern Washington. He knocked down 122 threes this year. He accounted for 366 points outside the arc. Oh, and by the way, you're wondering, where is Georgetown defending the three this year? Oh, let's see, 351, they're 263rd. They give up almost 36% of their threes this year. Interesting. That's why, you want to know why that's a trendy pick? It's a trendy pick for the reason I just talked about. Eastern Washington did win this year at Indiana. Davidson, Bob McKillop's team, does a lot of great things. And they always have. I mean, remember, this is the guy who coached Stephen Curry in college. They have 8 players on their team shooting 35% or better from 3. Tyler Kalinowski and Jack Gibbs are both 43% or better. Notre Dame, you just watched them in the ACC tournament. They rolled. And they were tremendous because they were able to consistently hit the three. And Pat Connaughton is an outstanding three-point shooter, but he has help. Other guys like Grant can shoot it. Connaughton's the best of the group, without question. And he hit 44% of his threes this year. For Pat Connaughton. I mean, he has the ball in his hands a lot. Why do I think, if you look at the field, there are two teams that stick out to me that had the potential to beat Kentucky? One is Wisconsin, because of their length. They can almost match the length of Kentucky with Decker, Nigel Hayes, and Kaminsky. The other part, though, is that Decker, Kaminsky, and Hayes all can hit the three, as can Bronson Koenig. That's why I like them. And yeah, Gosser is a good but not great three-point shooter. Which then brings us to Kentucky. What's the one area that Kentucky is vulnerable? And believe it or not, it's 15 to 25-foot shooting. That's why Devin Booker is one of the key players in this tournament. If he shoots at a steady rate, well, then Kentucky is going to be in great shape. here's the problem for Kentucky. Say you remove Booker's stats from the line. What's Kentucky's three-point percentage this year? 32%. So the others are no better than okay at shooting the three. Another great three-point shooting team in this tournament, Gonzaga. Kyle Wilcher, the Kentucky transfer, has been outstanding. Steps out, shoots the three, does a lot of great things. Kevin Pangos, Gary Bell Jr., also very, very good three-point shooters. Now, who's the best three-point shooting team in the field? Well, it's Fran O'Hanlon's group at Lafayette. Remember we had Dave Paulson on a week ago talking about what Lafayette does offensively? Well, they're an outstanding three-point shooting team. Percentage-wise, they're the best in the field. So just a couple of hints. I know some of you are thinking about filling out your brackets. We're a couple teams just to take a good long look at. 16's never beaten a one. Oh, by the way, the women's tournament was announced last night. Here's a stat for you. Seeds 14, 15, and 16. One win, 261 losses. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, guess what day it is?
Tuesday.
No, it's Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Remember, every day is Hyundai?
Hyundai.
And it's the Lease We Can Do sales event going on now at Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Hyundai.
The Lease We Can Do is cut the crap and give you low payments and no money down. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata SE for only $237 a month for 36 months with zero down. Zilch. Nada. Or lease a 2015 Hyundai Elantra SE for only $183 a month for 36 months. Again, no money down. Or you could go green. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata Hybrid for $250 a month for 36 months, and you guessed it, zero due at sign. No hidden fees, no plus tax, and blah, blah, blah. It's the lease we can do. These cars are here, these deals are real, and they're only at your home for Hyundai, Sunbury Motors Hyundai,
Hyundai.
In the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, where every day is Hyundai.
Hyundai!
Lease is based on 10,000 miles per year, zero total due assigning with approved HMFR Tier 1 financing, tax included. See dealer for complete details.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. We're going to talk about the Penguins coming up in about 10 minutes or so, and then James Franklin's spring football press conference coming up at 4:06. Hear what he has to say about his football team for the upcoming season and what he's looking at for the spring. Obviously, one of the things you'll look at right away will be the offensive line. And he'll talk about that, but that's what we have on tap for today. Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com coming up tomorrow. Also, Greg Brown from Pirates Camp coming up tomorrow as well. I believe Kevin is back later in the week. He has stayed away from the NCAA tournament. It's just, you know, he's been filling out bracket after bracket after bracket. I asked him, I said, how many brackets are you up to? And he said something about 292. He figures one of them has to be a winner in some sort of combination.
It's got to be a good chance.
Well, this is how he plays fantasy football. You know that.
Exactly.
But this is what happens with the tournament, right? What happens with the tournament is a lot like fantasy football and fantasy baseball. You know, for example, on your fantasy team, you have, I don't know, pick a player, Derek Carr, the quarterback from the Oakland Raiders. Suddenly you're following Raiders games that you never would have followed before. And you're following it because you want to know how Derek Carr is doing. Well, it's the same thing with this. Hey, look, I picked Gonzaga. How's Gonzaga doing? What do you know about Gonzaga? Not much. They have a good record. That's fine. But you're into it. And that's one of the things right off the top that is makes the tournament intriguing. A lot of people sit there and they watch the tournament. They enjoy the tournament and get into it because there are a lot of, you know because they want to see how their bracket does compared to yours. As I told you, that Dick Girardi wrote a great article in the Daily News about breaking the bracket down. I know he's going to get he's going to go to Pittsburgh, where he'll see Villanova, among others, play at Consol Energy. And then should they get out of there, then he goes to the Syracuse Regional at the Carrier Dome. And that's what's on tap for him. He kept telling me as it was going, he says, uh-oh, Virginia and Duke both lost. I said, yeah. He said, I think they were going to send Villanova to Los Angeles. I was looking forward to Los Angeles. I said, okay. He said, now I think they're going to go to Syracuse. I said, not looking forward to Syracuse? Like the Allstate commercial. Silence. We're going to talk about the Penguins coming up and also about the pace of play in the NHL in the next half hour. And it does a lot of work for the Penguins on radio. Will be joining us, Steve Colby. Talk with him coming up the next half hour. And then the James Franklin football press conference coming up just after the 4:06 news. We head to the bottom of the hour. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Coming up tomorrow, Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. And also Greg Brown, the voice of the Pittsburgh Pirates, all coming up tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. News is news.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. James Franklin's press conference on spring football for the Lions coming up about a half hour from now. We're looking forward to that. Get the head coach's take on his football team heading into a spring in which there's going to be more depth available. And that's very important in the development of his team and the program. More in the NCAA tournament later. Steve Colby works for the Penguins Radio Network. Does a great job for them. Also blogs. Also is the play-by-play voice of Robert Morris, but mostly covers the Pens, and he joins us now. Steve, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you? Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. Ironically, I was in Chicago on Saturday morning, and there was a Blackhawks fan with a Hossa jersey on, all in green. A green Hossa jersey.
Chicago's always a great place to be for St. Patrick's Day.
They were dyeing the river green that morning. So, you know. Let's get to the Pens. Let's talk about Malkin, described as a lower body injury. They say a week or two. Any update on Malkin?
Update earlier today from New Jersey is that obviously there were two different reports coming out on Evgeny Malkin after he was hurt against the Boston Bruins. Head coach Mike Johnston thought that he would at least miss the New Jersey game that happens tonight, and then it would be reevaluated, and was hopeful that he might be able to go on the rest of the trip to Dallas and Arizona. But it looks now that could be lengthening just a bit. So we're really not sure. It's up in the air. Maybe 1 to 2 weeks, could be day-to-day. So Evgeny Malkin's status right now is very hazy for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and maybe a little bit more clear the injury to Patrick Hornqvist. We know that Hornqvist is out for at least the next three games. Not sure what that injury is, but it did look good when Hornqvist was injured against Detroit on Sunday.
This has been some moments where you felt like they were on a roll, and there have been other moments where they've had to fight to get out of their own way. Why is that?
It has been an up-and-down roller coaster ride for this team, and they're looking for some consistency. And when we talk about consistency, that comes back to the line combinations as well. And you know how that goes. Whenever you don't have your centers playing with particular wingers for an extended period of time, and it looks like Daniel Winnick and Steve Downey are going to be the top line wingers tonight, at least from various reports coming from the Rock Prudential Center earlier today. One thing that has hurt the Penguins as well has been the power play. The power play hasn't scored a goal in the last four road games. They're 0-for-12 in that time. Chris Letang has an extended power play drought. He hasn't scored but one power play goal in his last 40-plus games. So you know you need production from a guy like Letang, who's pushing 11 goals on the season, already has 10. He's in that conversation for the Norris Trophy. So that's been one of the sticking points. The most consistent players for the Pens this year have been Marc-Andre Fleury, Evgeny Malkin, and Chris Letang. They have been the three most consistent players on this team.
Why hasn't Crosby been among the three?
You know, Crosby has had those games where he is, although he can still win the scoring race, there's no question about it. He can get hot at the right time. Sidney Crosby, I put him, in the top four if I was going out of the three stars department. But there have been so many games, not only for Sid, but also for a lot of players on this team, where there have been pointless games. I think that Sidney Crosby has had somewhere around 24, 25 pointless games on the season, which is you know, makes the number of points that he has this year all the more impressive because he's just behind John Tavares and company for the league lead in scoring. And it's not out of the question that Sitko comes from behind and is able to win the scoring race and also be the top assist man in the NHL when it's all said and done. But the Pens are going to have to rely on the key players. Their top players this year have to be the guys that get the job done when it comes to April and that first round of the playoffs.
Obviously, he's had a series of very tough injuries. Has he been a different player compared to the Crosby of 4 and 5 years ago before some of the head injuries he's had?
There have been some conversations about that as to whether or not Sid has played different, and I called that game at the Winter Classic at Heinz Field as well when Sidney Crosby was hit by David Steckel, and there have been a lot of conversations as to whether or not if he's the same guy that he was back then. This year, you know, obviously the mumps came through town, and he went through a lot of the NHL cities in terms of, if you want to count that as an illness or an injury. I'm not sure if you can really sort of tie those together. I just think that points are down all around the National Hockey League. We're not going to have a 100-point player this year. For a while, it did not look as though we were going to have a 50-goal player before Alex Ovechkin started to heat up. And once he got 22 goals in his last 22 games or something like that. So it was interesting to see whether or not you know, we were going to get there. But the points are down. That's why the GMs are talking in Boca Raton, Florida now about that scenario. How can the goal scoring go up? What do they have to do to make it that way? Will the shootout stay around? Will they have an extended overtime period like they have in the American Hockey League? So lots on the table right now. But I think at the end of the day, if I had to pick a player of those top five of the NHL guys, I would say that Sid has a really good chance to win the scoring championship.
Let's talk about the point production overall in the league for a moment. There was a point years ago when Jacques Lemaire introduced the center ice trap that scoring went down. Why is it down now, in your opinion?
Well, I think that, you know, for someone like me, and I know I've had this conversation on the air and talking with a lot of fans, not just Penguins fans, but NHL fans around the league, and I asked them this question: would you rather have your team win a 1-0, 2-1 game when it's critical and you need points and you need playoff victories, or have your team lose a more exciting game by the score of 5-4 or 6-5? And almost everyone will say, well, we want to win, but we want a lot of goals. Well, if you can't have it both ways, I'd rather have that trapping system like a Jacques Lemaire, like you mentioned. Minnesota did it for a while. The New Jersey Devils made it an art form. Whenever they had a two-goal or more lead in that third period, or even a one-goal edge going into the final frame, they were going to lock it down, and they weren't going to give it up. This year, I've heard the conversation about whether or not the goalies are just bigger and stronger and faster. Well, you know, there are a lot of goaltenders, including Marc-Andre Fleury. He doesn't fill the net like a Ben Bishop does, or you can go around the league and pick a Pecorine, like these huge goaltenders. However, it's the style of play. The butterfly style has taken away the lower portion of the net. Look back on the old films from the mid-'80s, the late-'80s, and before that, where the goaltenders were stand-up because the goals where you tried to kick them out with your skates and you misfired on that, those were going to deflect in. I think that's why the goals are down now, because those low shots no longer find the back of the twine.
All right. As someone who watches a lot and is there a lot, a couple of suggestions you would have to change and get the game rolling at a pace that would be more goal-friendly.
Well, I'm not a fan of making the nets bigger whatsoever.
I agree with that.
I think then you're taking away all the old marks. I think you're taking away the goal-scoring marks. It would be like moving the fences in baseball just to create more home runs, or like they're experimenting with now and making the goalpost smaller in the NFL. I think they experimented with that recently, right?
Yeah, the Pro Bowl.
To make the goalpost smaller in terms of extra points. I'm not for that, because then you take records and you really have to put a check mark next to them. Now, one thing that I haven't heard is maybe making the goalpost and the crossbar thinner, just to throw that out there. You make the goalpost and the crossbar thinner, so you don't make the net wider, but you do create an inch or two more. But right now, I go back at it on a day-to-day basis, and I look, if there's eight games in the course of a night in the NHL, five or more of those games are going to have a combined four goals. And I don't see that as a lack of scoring. And I went back, and I just did the numbers on this, guys, a couple of weeks ago. I went back to 2000 and 2001, and the goals are not down by that much more this season compared to that year back in 2000-2001. The anomaly there was the year after the lockout where there was an average of three goals per team per game. But it's been right on the par at 2.5, 2.6, 2.7. So the goals, I don't think, are down, and that's just hockey, and you've got to pick the way that you want to play. The playoffs, they're going to be a lot tighter than the regular season, so you might as well get used to it, because starting in mid-April, these are the types of games we're going to see.
That said, why has Marc-Andre Fleury put together maybe his best regular season?
Rock solid. One thing that Marc-Andre Fleury has had going for him is that he has a great relationship with Mike Bales. I think bringing Thomas Greiss in, and look, Jeff Zatkoff did an outstanding job last year, and all he did was win. He had a 9-game unbeaten streak when he was here spelling Marc-Andre Fleury, and Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be very rested. I don't expect Marc-Andre Fleury this year to play more than 62, 63 games, maybe even fewer than that, with four sets of back-to-backs coming up for the Penguins between now and the end of the regular season. But one thing that he has been able to do, while this team has had more puck possession and they wanted to control the action, not only inside their own zone, but through center ice and then moving into the offensive end for all the, if you want to call them, goal-scoring woes that the Pens have had with Evgeny Malkin, who is pushing 30 goals. Sid is under 25 right now. The new faces that have come in, and Hornquist has been great. You've got Blake Como, Steve Downey, for a guy logging bottom 6 minutes, still has over a dozen goals this year. One thing that Fleury doesn't do, he doesn't get rattled, and that's good for a goaltender. He has a bad game, and he's had two back-to-back bad games now. He's given up four goals in each of his last two starts. I'd expect that won't bother him in his next start, going ahead against New Jersey or going into the game in Dallas or in Arizona against the Coyotes. He's got amnesia, guys. He has a short-term memory. He never gives up on a play, very competitive. And he's made some highlight reel saves all year long. So Marc-Andre Fleury, he should be in the conversation for the Vezina Trophy. Chris Letang should be in the conversation for the Norris Trophy. And the Pens should be able to have two finalists for both those two honors.
Steve, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your insight. It's greatly appreciated. I know the audience loved it.
Anytime, guys. Have yourself a great day.
All right. And we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, 15 minutes away from hearing James Franklin's press conference as Penn State gets ready for spring practice. Our thanks to Steve Colby, who joined us from the Penguins Radio Network. Tomorrow, Greg Brown from the Pirates Radio Network. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com is going to join us. And I believe on Friday we'll have Joe Susan, Bucknell's football coach, coming up. Tomorrow night, speaking of Bucknell, they'll open the NIT at the Lee Corps Center when they take on Temple in an 8-1 matchup. Our thanks to Dave Paulson for being on the show yesterday. But we have a lot going on, obviously, with the Penguins earlier and James Franklin coming up in the next half hour. And on top of that, tomorrow, Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com and Greg Brown from the Pirates Radio Network. The tournament gets underway tonight. Hampton will be in action against Manhattan. The winner of that game gets to be bludgeoned by Kentucky. And then you have BYU taking on Ole Miss coming up tonight. One of the first four games. So the first four games taking place in Dayton. Dayton, by the way, on its home floor, plays tomorrow night. And it'll be the first time in years that a team has played on its home floor in the NCAA tournament. Now, this is one of the contingencies that they'd said, look, if Dayton's going to be the permanent home of the first four, they asked the question, what if Dayton makes it? And they said, look, it's just going to if it happens, it happens, but they're not moving Dayton out of there or moving the tournament. They happen to be seated there. But I don't like the way they've done this. I think that once you're in the field, 1 through 68, I think now it becomes a 1 through 68 proposition. It doesn't matter whether you're an automatic bid or whether you happen to be an at-large bid. And I think Wyoming should have been the team playing in this game. They're the last team in the tournament. Everyone knows they're the last team in the tournament. They don't win the Mountain West Conference they don't get into the NCAAs. Same thing with UConn. If UConn had somehow won over SMU, actually they would have knocked Dayton out of the tournament. And UConn would have been the next team in. But UConn, like Wyoming, would have avoided the first four. I don't find that right. I think once you're in, I think there's no difference between an automatic bid and an at-large bid. In fact, to sit there and say, well, you know, we don't want automatic bids playing in this game. What do you think Hampton and Manhattan happen to be? They're both automatic bids. And tomorrow night you'll have two more 16s playing along with two 11s. So the logic there doesn't quite add up in this. That's why I brought that up. I think that it's something they need to change, that if you're the last team in the tournament or the last four teams in the tournament, the last four should include an automatic bid. Because let's face it, Wyoming would be the 60, would, you know, not necessarily the 36th at-large team, but they're the 32nd bid in among the automatic qualifiers to get in. They should be one of the teams playing in this round, having to qualify them in. They're a 12 seed. Remember one year, I think it was South Carolina, and I want to say it was 2009, was 500, slightly above 500. They shocked everybody, and they won the SEC tournament. That's what it did. That's how they got in. And as a rarity, now here's the Southeastern Conference tournament champion. They were seeded 13th. Now, normally, if you're one of the Power Five conferences, it is rare that anybody, in fact, this is the only time I remember it. It's only happened the one time with South Carolina. No other Power Five school has been ranked any lower than 12th, seeded any lower than 12th in this thing, ever. And South Carolina was in a position where they won the tournament, got in, and they were seeded 13th. Now, there's an example that if they had the first four then, South Carolina should not be exempt from the first four because they have an automatic bid. They should be playing in the first four. And that's the same story with Wyoming this year. Now, Dayton will play on its home floor tomorrow night. But that's just a point I wanted to make moving forward, one of the tweaks that they need to make to the NCAA tournament. That just, it's something I think that they need to do down the road, where the first four, which are allegedly the last four in, well, seating wise, that should be what it is. And we'll talk football in the next half hour. Talked about the we talked earlier about the top 3-point shooting teams in this thing. Well, again, you look at the top 3-point shooting teams in this thing. One team I got to mention, and I've talked about this before. We've talked about the length of Wisconsin and how the length of Wisconsin, the fact that all three guys in that front line can pop out and shoot threes. That's what makes it a tougher matchup, in quotations, for Kentucky. And people have talked about Arizona. I'm not big on Arizona in this spot. I may be proven wrong, but I'm not big initially going in. But nobody's talked about Villanova. Here's the one team in this tournament that can bomb 15 threes. They can bomb 15 threes. They have eight guys on this team that can shoot it from outside the arc, and six of the eight shoot 37% or better. The three-point shot is the great equalizer. And they can do that, as can Notre Dame. Gonzaga can as well, but you know, I'm still not quite there on Gonzaga. I'm still not quite there. And part of the problem is you go through 2.5 months of playing in the West Coast Conference. After a while, you really lose sight of how good somebody really is. One of the reasons, Gonzaga has not been past the first weekend since 2009. And a lot of people don't realize that. Gonzaga's been rated high, seeded high, had great seeds. They were a one seed. I think it was last year. They were a two seed this year. They haven't been out of the first weekend since, I think, 2009. That's why you wonder about strength. Strength of schedule does enter into it. All right, next half hour, James Franklin press conference talking about the Nittany Lion football team and the upcoming season. Spring practice will get underway Friday for the Nittany Lions. Blue-white game coming up in a month, April 18th at Beaver Stadium with a 4 o'clock start. And we'll pick up James Franklin's press conference in the Penn State media room to talk about spring ball. Then we'll open up the phone lines in the final half hour of the show. Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com tomorrow. Greg Brown, play-by-play voice of the Pirates, coming up tomorrow. The tournament gets underway tonight. Manhattan against Hampton at 6:40. Nightcap, Ole Miss, BYU from Dayton. News next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.